Welcome to the Dropping Dimes podcast. This is a Two Cents show. I'm your host, Rodrigo, but you can call me Rod. And on this occasion, it is truly an honor to have a person that I've enjoyed and have the pleasure to chat about basketball and discuss basketball with him for many, many years now. Joining us today is bicycle lover, craft beer enthusiast, Chicago Bulls loyal fan, and most important, my namesake, Dr. Rodrigo Vargas Hernandez. Welcome to the show. How are you, man?
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm super excited.
I can't help but notice that you're wearing a Dennis Rodman Bulls jersey. That's pretty cool.
Yes.
So
all day.
We're going to get to know you a little bit more. Before we get started, actually, I just introduced you as doctor. But for everyone out there, you know, people think doctor of medical sciences. But you want to tell everyone what kind of doctor you are?
So I think the formal degree is PhD in chemistry. I've always told this joke that I'm the worst chemist, and the only chemistry I do every day is caffeine extraction and hot water. Besides that, I don't do anything else. But yeah, so formally I'm a PhD Vargas Hernandez, but no one else PhD is doctor, so yeah.
So I'm going to still call you doctor, even though we've known each other for many years, just, you know, to add that degree of formality to the interview. But for everyone out there listening, we're going to get to know Dr. Vargas a little bit more. And then we're going to talk about something that, if it hadn't been for you, I don't think I would be as interested, to be honest, which is machine learning, data analysis, and analytics in the NBA and basketball in general. So we're going to take a bit of a deep dive there. I have some good questions that we're going to discuss. And then we're going to talk about a paper. So basically an essay that we both read. Obviously, you recommended a few to me. And we're going to try to dissect that and put it into very simple terms because there was a lot of it that I could not understand. And for the people listening so that they can also know what we're talking about. And then we're going to predict the future using science. Okay. That sound good?
That's always a big money question if we can't predict the future with science, but let's give it a shot.
We're going to give it a shot. All right. Let's get to know you a little bit. So Dr. Vargas Hernandez, I know that you're a huge basketball fan, and for the people that are going to be watching this on YouTube, they will notice it right away. But can you tell us, how did basketball make its way into your life?
So I actually was like thinking about that. You might ask me this question, and I was looking back on the good old days of high school. So right. Both of us grew up in Mexico. And yeah. If people don't know, there's only one sport in Mexico, which is soccer.
Correct. That's correct.
So yeah. Growing up, all my friends were soccer maniacs. But the problem was that my high school was a pretty small high school, like student-wise, the number of students.
Yeah.
And some of my close friends, they were actually like in the basketball team. And the problem is like they needed players actually so that they don't shut down the basketball program. So it was actually bizarre. And I, for those who will see, I will do quotations, but like I was a tall guy in Mexico. So I think right now I'm 6'1". I think back then I was not 6'1". I probably was like way shorter, but I was a tall guy in Mexico.
I can verify that you are considered tall back home. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So what happened was like my friends told me, it's like, okay, so you're tall, you know, we're running short on players. Do you mind playing? So back then I was chubby. And when I told my mom, I know was like, yes, whatever you have to do exercise, I'll support you. So yeah, join the team. So I joined the team. We were actually 7 players in the whole team.
Right.
But it's not a big team. So not a big roster. So it wasn't hard for me to be like starter. So yeah, that's actually how I came up to love basketball, just by the chance that my friends were like basketball lovers. So
you almost fall into that stereotype of like the tall guy in the school needs to play basketball.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't the tallest guy. So actually my best friend who was the tallest guy, but I was one of the tall guys. So right. That's why actually they asked me. Because also the other two friends who were playing, which is also brothers, they were actually like short-ish guys. So they don't need any more short guys. They actually needed big guys. So I don't know, played both hands. So yeah.
Mobile wasn't a thing just yet in those times.
I, No, no, you mentioned it, right? Actually, those two guys were three-point maniacs. They didn't shoot anything else besides three-point. That's probably why we lose so much, but...
Maybe back in the day, yeah, we were not ready for that. I mean, it is obvious to everyone that is going to watch this, but you're wearing, like I mentioned, a Dennis Rodman Bulls jersey. And my next question is, what is your favorite basketball team? Which is obvious, it's the Chicago Bulls. But so let me ask you this. Have you always been a Chicago Bulls fan?
Yes. I mean, the thing is, like, I grew up watching the 90s Bulls. So, again, we have to go back to my childhood years. And the Bulls were so big that even national TV in Mexico will broadcast only the Bulls games.
That's true. Yeah, yeah.
So actually, it's not – I grew up watching only one team, which was the Bulls. So, therefore, you have to support the Bulls. Only if you were, like – a true basketball lover like yourself, you will know something probably beyond the Bulls. But when I grew up, it was like whoever against the Bulls, that was the TV show.
Yeah.
They didn't care who else they were playing. Probably was a lot the Utah Jazz, because they will face up a lot in the finals and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it was, you only watch the Bulls on national TV. That's it. Like,
there's this weird, almost like cult to Michael Jordan back in Mexico.
Yeah.
Everyone, like, up to this day, and you're not going to let me lie about this, but people still idolize Michael Jordan to the point where, you know, people actually used to hate Kobe, used to hate LeBron. You know, for you and I that are the younger generations and watch Kobe and LeBron, I remember older friends and people that were older than me, my teams, they would tell me that I was out of my mind for liking Kobe or anyone else that was not Jordan, basically.
Sure, I actually think, like, I mean, also the second thing is, like, Chicago has a big Mexican population. So that's what I was like, there's a lot of, like, social factor that why a lot of the people in Mexico were actually, like, Bulls fans. But, and I mean,
people love wearing Jordans back home. I mean, it is,
yeah,
like, it's its own cult to be a Michael Jordan and Bulls fan back home.
I think the other thing that is also kind of fun is, like, I mean, you will see a lot of people wearing, like, the Jordan logo. And if you were wearing one of those t-shirts, it just shows, like, money.
Also, you know,
like, fancy clothing and stuff like that. So it's actually, like, just, like, social branding. It's like, if you were to wear a Jordan hat or a Jordan, it was just like, oh, then people had money.
Yeah, yeah.
You may not be a basketball player whatsoever, but everybody understood the jumping guy is Jordan, and it's associated with basketball. And I'm just like, yeah.
Speaking of Jordan, was he your favorite player growing up?
Sure. But, I mean, he's not – I mean, for me, and we can discuss some of the day, and we have done this multiple times, he's the GOAT. The GOAT.
I respect that.
Look up on him as a, like – what I would like to be as a basketball player. Sure, what he did on the court for me is still unbelievable, unmeasurable, and whatever you want to, like, dissect it. But no, he's not, like, my look-up guy. Like,
so I think, who's your favorite basketball player? Dennis Rodman?
No, it's Dennis Rodman, hands down. Like, I love that guy. But probably it's because of it was closest to how I play basketball. The thing is, like, I ended up playing basketball late in my life, quote unquote. I mean, I was 15 years old, but, like, by how now people start playing when they are like 4 or 5, you'd watch Instagram videos.
Yeah.
So I never had the time to develop a jumper, never had the time to develop, like, a full basketball, you know, like, abilities.
Yeah.
So I actually ended up playing defense and rebounds.
Yeah.
And then, if there's someone who has been so proud to, like, to wear that flag, has been Dennis Rodman. So for me, saying, like, this pretty small, again, in quotation, as, like, he used to play center, if you want to call it, but he's not a center guy. Like, he wasn't that much taller than Jordan and Pippen, but he will guard, like, big guys. And he will be, like, a mastermind of rebounds, a mastermind of just, like, defending people. So I don't know. For me, that was, like, the dirty job that needed to be done so that you can have, like, a successful franchise. And I was like, man, that's hard. Like, sure, everyone wants to be Michael Jordan. I totally get it. But I think, like, what he does is also as like as unique as like what Jordan was doing. So that's what I love. Also, like whatever he was doing off the court, like I remember my mom, even my mom will know who was Dennis Rodman. And the reason she will know is because it's like they will be in the newspapers in Mexico. There's like, there's one, for example, called TV Notas, which is like all the gossip. And then you will have on the cover Madonna and Dennis Rodman. And like, and you will be like, that's the guy. Like, that's the guy. Like, if you date Madonna, yeah, you're doing something right. So, I don't know. It's fun to me. He was pretty wild also off the court.
Yeah, I mean, there's, and you said it right, there's only a few guys in the 90s that could have made a name of themselves by playing defense. It was a very offense-heavy, I mean, to be a superstar, you have to score a lot of points, right? Yes. You can just be, have zeros in your, in the stats sheet. But Dennis Rodman, he pulled it off. He made himself a reputation when he was with the Pistons of, you know, being that guy that did the dirty work, grabbing the rebounds and going for the loose balls. And when he was with the Bulls, that was apex Rodman, right? That was best version of defensive Rodman that we could ever get.
Like, I think it's also pretty impressive that like I think right now if you play in the NBA and you get like, let's say 20 rebounds, people will be like, heh, heh. Like, not surprising, you know, but you get zero points. People will be like, you're doing something wrong. But back in those days, getting those rebounds, meaning like you were fighting among 3-4 players in the same spot, right?
Yeah.
And then, so I think it was just like pretty impressive that he took up above the challenge to say, like, I'm going to get 0 points on the board, on like 0 points on my box score. I don't care. Yeah. I'm just going to get like, stack the boards. It's 25, 30, whatever is the number. And you will be like, this is insane. Like, this is insane that you say like that someone is paying you millions of dollars to just say like, I don't want to score points, you know, like I'm just going to get rebounds.
Yeah.
And you have to pay me a bad check to do that.
You could consider him an offensive liability because he was not scoring, right?
I mean, I think this comes into play as like, I don't think the Bulls back then needed someone to take the balls more out of Jordan's and Pippen's hands or like Stockton or whatever. I think they have enough firepower. So actually bringing a guy to say like, you know, like I'm going to score whenever I get a like an offensive rebound or like a completely free dunk. I have no problem. So I will not demand you the ball. So I think that was like, that's also like a pretty neat move from the GM to say like, okay, we already have enough firepower. We're just not going to dilute the ball time among the players. Just let's get someone who just crank up the defense and just see what happened. We got another trip.
And as history would have it, it worked out pretty well for the Bulls in the 90s. So,
and they also got like a lot of, you know, like whenever he was partying in Vegas, you will associate Dennis Rodman with the Bulls. So it's just like free media time, you know, like.
That's true. I mean, all his off-court antiques and his personality.
Exactly, like,
it was just free press,
like,
I guess.
Dennis Rodman did this. It doesn't matter. He still delivers on the course and people would just like talking like endless gossip about this guy partying with whoever. I don't know.
And would you still say that Dennis Rodman is a player that you most identify with in terms of your playing style?
No. No, and the reason is because the last years that I played basketball, I actually had to change who I was as a player.
Yeah.
So probably in the defense-wise a little bit, I'll still guard big, again, not like here 7 foot taller that are like so scared, like there's no one like that in Mexico, but like taller guys on the post, I'll still guard them. But probably like, I actually had to change my game a lot in the offensive because I didn't have like shooting. I don't have a shooting technique.
Yeah.
So I actually ended up doing most of like Damon Green. So I'll just bring the ball up. And then because I'm a big guy, I will draw big guys up.
Yeah.
And I think I was a pretty good passer, or that's what I would like to claim. I don't know. It's like an unsupported argument as a scientific. So we need to check this. But I ended up to see the movement through the eyes of passing.
Right.
So I was just like, okay, I'm a big guy. I don't know how to shoot, but if I know how to dribble a little bit and I can make decent screens, I can get the best guy in the best position. So it became a combination. I actually like to think that Damon Green is the new suit, not suit up as like muscle wise, but like IQ-wise, the closest version to Dennis Rodman right now. I mean, Dennis Rodman never needed to shoot, even though he has pretty icon shoots where he's like alone in the triple line shooting and celebrating like crazy. But I think it was just like, we're going to give you a loan. And right now, because of the amount of points you need to score to win a game, you have to be forced to shoot. Right. Like I don't think Damon Green wants to shoot. It's just that it's literally the last thing that they have on the possibilities of play that is like, okay, I'll shoot. Like if it happened, it happened.
Right.
But so yeah.
So Draymond Green and Dennis Rodman. That's quite the combo. That's quite the combo.
Yeah. I don't know. I blame my basketball coach for not teaching me how to jump, how to like shoot jumpers. Like, if I had a jumper, probably I'll be, like, more ambitious and, like, completely offensive-oriented, but...
I'm going to test your memory a little bit with the next few questions. Actually, before that, do you have a favorite pair of shoes to play basketball in?
No. Although, I've always played with Adidas.
Oh, really?
All my basketball shoes has been Adidas.
Yeah.
And... I think the reason was that my first pair of shoes were Adidas, right. One of Dwight Howard's signature shoes. And I think I bought them because I was a big guy and he was back then the best big guy in the game.
Like when he was with Orlando, right?
Yes, exactly. So I got, my first pair of shoes was like this white and blue Adidas.
Okay.
So I got those ones. Those was my first pair of basketball shoes. I don't know, just like how it felt. And just kept playing with Adidas. And then I got a second version from him, which was like these black ones with like bubbles on the bottom.
Okay.
They were like quite good and comfy. I don't know. I think the last one was just like a generic Adidas that I got for playing. So I was a PhD student on the student stipend, not much money for sneakers.
Do you remember what was the first jersey that you either got as a gift or that you bought? What was your first basketball jersey?
So formally, this is my first basketball jersey.
The one that you're wearing right now.
Yeah. So, but I don't like to say that. Actually, like the first thing I got basketball oriented is this 98 t-shirt of the Chicago Bulls champion.
Oh, nice.
So I still have it back in Mexico, or I hope my mom hasn't thrown it away. It might worth some money. So I like to say that was my first basketball jersey. But I mean, it's not a formal jersey, so yeah, this one was my first basketball jersey. So,
and did you get that? The jersey you're wearing, did you get in Chicago or what?
Yes, so yeah, like, and that was my first basketball game. So, my girlfriend was like going to a conference in Chicago, and I was like, okay, we're going to Chicago. And then she's like, well, I'm in a conference, doesn't matter, we're gonna watch the Bulls. So I saved some money and then I end up like, I always wanted a Bulls jersey from Dennis Rodman. So it was like perfect occasion, first game of NBA game in the United Center. I'll just like throw some cash and get my jersey. So yeah, this is my first one.
And that's recent, right? That happened like a couple of years ago. Cause I remember your trip.
like, I don't know. 3 years ago, like something like that.
So fairly recent.
Pretty, not disappointing, but I watched the Bulls on St. Patrick's Day. So I watched the Bulls on the green uniform.
Oh, you're right, yeah.
And I was like, no. But
I've never been a fan of their green jerseys, to be honest.
Yeah. Fun because the team that they were playing against was the Memphis Grizzlies. And we being from Vancouver, if you want to say, was kind of like a nice coincidence that it's not the Vancouver's, the Grizzlies from Vancouver, but like kind of the same team.
It's a nice shout out to Vancouver, that's for sure.
Yeah. So
let's start talking about your field. In a very, very big scope right now. We're gonna go into more detail, but how, for everyone listening, you know, I don't think that any of us, when we start playing, maybe in math class and physics when the instructor tries to make it fun, but we don't relate science to basketball.
Oh, that's, no.
It's usually, and me being a misunderstood artist, as I like to joke around, I say that basketball is an art, it's poetry. That comparison is a lot more used and thrown around. So how is science related to basketball?
Okay. So as a I would love to be called a physicist, even though by title I'm not a physicist. I think basketball is physics, and that's the first attempt. And the simplest example is the arc of your jump, of your jumper, of the ball you throw, sometimes dictates the chances that the ball will go in the hoop or not. So if you right. if you shot like something pretty flat, for example, the surface between the hoop and the surface of the ball gets reduced. So you have high, a lower chances to actually make the ball. So if you jump like a pretty high arc shoot, then the total area of the ball and the hoop becomes larger. So you have higher chances to actually make the ball in. So kind of like those little tips that you never think of, because unfortunately right. in physics class, they tell you how to solve a car will crash to another car and whatever. And you always make this joke like buying 400 like watermelons and whatever, like those
right, completely right.
unrelated topics. But I was reading one day about this idea of the arc of the ball. And I think when you actually try to explain it, it makes sense. So Curry is one of the shooters who has the highest arc. And it's not right. surprised it has one of the highest percentage.
It should,
but if
yeah.
you see, for example, not to have anything, Damon Green's shot is pretty flat.
Yeah.
And that is just, again, like the ball has lower chances to actually make it through the hoop. So, I don't know. That's one of the arguments that I always like to throw on beers. When like,
and that's a very, that's an easy concept to grasp, right? Like,
yeah, yeah.
We all know, whether we are scientists or not, that, you know, if my shot is flat, you know, obviously my percentage will go down. The more arch I put into it, the better my chances, right? And that's why we teach, or we try to yeah. learn to, you know, arch your shots and whatnot.
The other thing is the spin of the ball. If okay. you spin the ball gets with a lower velocity on the rim, and then it will bounce no further. So that's, you also have higher chances that by like bouncing, it will make it through the hoop. Well, if you actually throw like a stone, like, you know, like yeah. completely, like kind of if you were like a quarterback, that has so higher momentum and velocity that even if it touches the rim, probably the energy is so hard that it will bounce back out of the rim. And so that is also why like people actually like to make the spin, because that reduces the total velocity that the ball will get to the hoop.
I would love for, say, Ray Allen or someone to say, like, yeah, I was totally thinking about the velocity.
No, I don't think so, man.
No, but this is, again, this is very graspable, right? And for everyone listening, you know, I hope that you're thinking about these concepts and how science makes a difference, right? And that's why all these teams are investing in data scientists. But related to that, can you give us a very brief explanation of what is machine learning? Because we're going to talk about this very soon.
Okay, so this is a pretty awesome topic that I love, even though I'm not a machine learning expert, like I'm not a computer scientist. I just, as you said, dedicated my research life to how to apply that to physics problems, to like physical problems. So I got in depth and I keep learning and I try to learn as much as possible. But every time everyone asks me, I think it's just like a pseudo version of algorithms. That's always like to say, it's like math was created, but probably in my opinion, the best invention that the humans have done is computers. So you have one hand, which is like pretty cool math, but then you have like a really powerful computer. But I think we haven't managed to actually get the full juice of a computer. And I think machine learning, that's what I tried to say, is like, okay, you give me a pretty good computer, I'm gonna try to make the best out of it for a few specific problems. And I think that's what like the whole idea of machine learning has done, is like, I have a few specific problems. I'll try to come up with the best kind of like numerical tools to explain this with the computational power that you're giving to me. But that's one way to put it.
Right.
If you ask now in a little bit more deep detail, you can break down machine learning in three subfields. And one is kind of like linear regression or classification, which is talking basketball is, what is the chance that I'm going to make a jumper or like a shoot? The arc, the initial velocity, I don't know, the rotation of my hand, whatever you want to give it. And then based on that, you try to predict based on like some, what I call some videos or like some data that we have, will they make, will the shot will be in or out? So that's one. For those who are interested, this is called supervised learning.
Okay.
And the whole idea is you don't know the map between, let's say, the spin of the ball, the velocity, the arc, and whatever, to the percentage of making the basket. And you want to map that you want to find that mapping. And this is what machine learning tries to do. Is I give you some examples, and you try to find this numerical map. Now, it's complete free if you want. That's when like the whole beauty of machine learning comes into how to do it.
Yeah.
The second one that is more related to what we're going to discuss is called unsupervised learning.
Yeah.
And the whole idea of unsupervised learning is I have something, some data, but all I know is like there must be some internal structure on this data.
Yeah.
And you actually like be powerful enough to just like do it for me. So people always do this example, I think being completely biased, but like you have tons of pictures of cats and dogs.
Yeah.
One way is either you classify them as cats and dogs and you train it on a supervised learning matter to say, this is the pixels and the label is a cat. So the pixels and the label is a dog. And then you have, or the other one is, you know, in some weird mathematical space, these two things are completely different. So that you actually will break them apart and say like, this is probably object A and object B, but because they don't relate at all, they don't have to be close together. And this is kind of unsupervised learning. The reason it's called unsupervised is because we don't have the label. Okay. All we have are the pixels, and what we're actually trying to find is the mapping between like how to make them as different as possible. Or if they are close as possible together.
Got it.
And the last one, which is in my opinion the most interesting one, but it's the hardest, is reinforcement learning. And I won't go into detail, but if you have time, I love this documentary of AlphaGo. And the whole idea is you have a goal, which in case of games are defeat your opponent.
Right.
But this is an environment that gets changed step by step. So if you play chess or we play Go, every time you move a stone or a piece, kind of the game change, right? And you also need a strategy and planning and trying to guess what you're going to do in your future place and whatsoever. So the whole idea is you create an algorithm that learns how to plan, but it's only based on did you win or lose, nothing else. Like, right. Oh, if you win, then you did something correct among the steps of the choices that you make. Mm-hmm. If you lose, then you have to revisit. And so it's a harder task. It's more beautiful because I think it maps is like more beautiful into things we do in a daily life.
Yeah.
But oh, making progress on that one is really hard. So
they all sound incredibly tough to me.
That's machine learning. But I think for basketball, data analysis is a little bit more closely related, which mm-hmm. is kind of get a better definition or like a better grasp of like something that describes players, you know? Like, yeah. Can I correlate players better? Like all I know about players is the box score or some video about like the plays that this thing. Can I actually like, given this information, can I deduct something? You know, like what is the most probable play that someone will do? Or is there some tendencies on the players? So I think that is what people are actually looking for as a data analysis rather than like developing these massive algorithms and stuff like that.
Got it. So you gave us already a couple examples, and I want to talk more about the analytics and the data movement in the NBA, because we are still living it. And
yeah,
how, especially, you know, the Warriors and the Rockets, who are the two teams that always come up to mind when we talk about analytics and data analysis when it comes to the NBA. So all these teams, almost all the teams now have some sort of, you know, Moneyball department within the organization, right? Obviously, like I said, the Rockets and the Warriors are at the forefront of this battle, this movement. And they're using, you know, data analytics to justify their decisions. And the same with the advanced analytics, right? They're trying to use that to say, like, this is why we got rid of Clint Capella, because we need him, right? The more shooters we have, the better. I'm just throwing an example.
Yeah.
So why do you think this happened until now and not before? Like, why didn't it happen with the Jordan Bulls and with the Showtime Lakers and until now?
Okay, that's a pretty awesome question. The first thing and the most obvious answer, even though it's obvious no one think of, is computational power.
Okay.
So we don't, well, I think we got used to it to see so much computational power that like among generations of phones, the computational power almost doubles and we don't notice it. We just like get mad because our phone crashes, even though it's even more powerful than what the computer was used to, like shoot a rocket to the moon and land a human over there. So that's the first thing. And I always like to mention it because it seemed obvious, but we know. So probably like maybe we have the data back then. I also don't think so, but we didn't have the tools to actually start like grasping the things. It's just like the computers maybe in the 80s and the 90s were so slow that to get a decent number, it wasn't feasible yet. And I think around the 2010, the computational power is like capable enough now to do like normal day life problems. And I think that's always the answer. The second thing is we didn't have the culture of gathering data.
Okay.
We never. It was like, we will have records of data, but it was just for the sake of having them, not for the sake of using them in our advantage.
Right.
And I think that's something probably that changed, and you could see in the Moneyball department, in the Moneyball movie. It's like, they had the data because someone pulled the records, and then based on that, they use it, but it's not because they wanted to use it for their advantage. It was there, but no one actually sit down and say like, well, actually, what happened if I just start playing around and just like, crunch up numbers and then make use of it. It is just a recent thing that now is like, we generate so much data because we know we need it. Back then we generated data, but we didn't need it. Like, there is the biggest example of like, I'm not gonna say it, but like, because we're not sponsored by that, but like a supermarket store, they have like the data of all the clients about like credit cards or what we buy. And they didn't know what to do. They just had it there, but they didn't know what to do. They just been collecting them for like decades and saying like, I know whoever is this credit number has bought like for the last year, 10 gallons of milk.
Right.
But they never came up to the sales department to say like, what if you start targeting those customers or whatever? It was never that idea, which is like, we just gathered the data, but no one came up. And I think right now it's more used to that, like, we gathered the data because we know now we can use it. Mm-hmm. And that's the second thing that I think I like to mention it. What else? Well, I think the third reason is because it's always cheaper to hire. It might be not be in the future. To hire a computer scientist geeky guy than a LeBron James. So it's cheaper if you actually like, this is what I love Moneyball movie. It's like when they hired the mathy guy, by the revenue they got from all the winnings, it was like a no cost.
Right.
Like, I don't think even that guy got paid as like the coach or any of those guys, you know, like on like.
Probably not. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Not even as we always say, the left bench player in the team. Like,
yeah.
Like, not even the water boy. So it's a pretty cheap trick actually for teams to become better. You don't have to actually draft or like go after like big stars. If you can actually say like, give me a guy that always the whole idea is out of what I have, the total resources, give me the best team that I could possibly assemble. And that always has like an economic benefit for teams.
Right.
And I think that's something that might not be, again, obvious, but I think that's has been the line, is like, we're going to use this guy in our benefit also to save some money, because not everybody could have LeBron James or, I don't know, like Giannis or all those big guys, right? Like,
yeah. So the Warriors are obviously the success story of analytics, right? They won 3 out of the 4 finals that they went to, and they sort of based their decisions out of what they had, you know, all the data that they produced, et cetera, et cetera. But why do you think that other teams haven't been as successful in replicating this model?
Okay. I think the reason is because no one has drafted a Steph Curry and a Klay Thompson.
Okay.
So, like, I mean, it's like, you could have, like, I mean, come on, go with Philadelphia. Like, yeah. Philadelphia had, like, Embiid and
Simmons.
And Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
Which maybe play by, well, I don't think there are, maybe individually they are better than Klay Thompson and Stephen Curry. I will not like to say that, but just for a sake of example. But the whole idea is, I think it was just like pure luck that those guys got managed to draft two guys that were completely awesome, that coherently coexist within each other. And then the second part was like, okay, we already have these two pieces. What are we going to do? We don't need a third shooter guy. That makes no sense. So what we need a guy is like a wing defending guy. Okay, let's bring Andre Iguodala. We need a high pick and roll guy. Let's bring Damon Green. Yeah. Let's bring an alley-oop guy who may back, man, it feels like 5 years ago, will defend the rim. It seems so back in the days that, oh, we need someone to defend the rim. It's like, and then they have the guy from Australia. Yeah. So I think that was the whole idea. It was like, okay, why do we need to make these two pieces successful? And I think that was like the whole idea. And I think that was like the Rockets are doing right now. It's like...
So what do you think that maybe the Rockets are not... They haven't been able to follow that formula, even though they're using, you know, analytics and everything that they have at their disposal?
I don't know. Well, this is something probably yet, but I think they will crush it, or probably like my lack of knowledge will say, but like when you watch a Rockets game and the Warriors game is so different.
Yeah.
Like, no doubt, the beard guy, James Harden is awesome.
Yeah.
But it's like a pretty low-paced basketball. No low-paced in the amount of possessions and dribbling and blah, blah. It's like we know that guy's going to get the ball. And I think something we tend to forget is like humans are not robots. And I could tell you that you shoot at 30% of shooting, but that is in the total volume.
Yeah.
If you don't shoot for 5 minutes, talking myself, you're not going to shoot the next jumpers pretty good. So if out of like 10 possessions, James Harden just like, so I don't know if it's like a hole in the algorithm that says like, we really need to distribute the ball so that everybody stays warm and everybody could shoot.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never looked at the numbers, but watching the basketball, that's my idea. It's like the basketball of the Warriors is like coherent. You know, it's like there are plays, they try to get everyone involved. So like everybody gets shots and you start warming up.
Right.
Well, in the case on the Rockets is like, we're going to give him the ball. Either he's managed to do a jump or he's going to pass. And you have to be ready to catch and shoot. Like no more dribblings, no nothing, no more picks, no nothing. And so that's will be my hand wave argument.
It makes sense. I mean, it totally makes sense. Even if you know, just by watching it, you know that James Harden and Westbrook are going to potentially take all the shots. So if Eric Gordon is in the corner just waiting for his turn, chances are that, you know, he might not be warm, right? Like that hand is not hot. So, you know, you don't need to go all the way on his face. Like he might just miss it for the sake of not being able to take shots before.
So that's I think the other thing that D'Antoni, and that's my idea, forgets that defense is important. I know it's not the clue. And I'm not saying he's not a defense-oriented person. Well, the Warriors were.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that's the difference. Like, we're going to outshoot you on the offense, but we're not going to let you score easy.
Yeah.
And I think D'Antoni has played in the way it's like, as long as I can make you shoot, let's say, 14 seconds above the clock, I'm fine. Because according to the total volume, I'll shoot more, so I'll go outwin you. But the problem is like you can be on those like cold nights that nothing is just like coming in, and on top of that you don't have the idea of defending, so you're just gonna get out. Like with DC, these two types of game with the Rockets, the ones that they win pretty easily because everything is just like falling in the net, and the ones that there's like nothing falling, but on top of that the defense is just like completely deflated. So.
So let's talk about, you know, why do you think that some teams and former players, and I'm talking about people like Charles Barkley, are so much against the numbers and the stats, right? Do you think that, I mean, their argument is that the numbers don't tell the entire story about basketball, and that's why they're so against it.
Sure. I think that, and that is because the way we gather numbers. So we don't have the true metric, you know, like the way to classify, like if a player is truly doing what it deserves to be, like what it does in the court is truly like, you know, like described by this, let's call it D metric.
Yeah.
So there's nothing like that. So all the metric has its flaws.
Right.
And I think that's the problem is like, I could tell you like, oh, you did like, I don't know, like 15 passes, but probably those passes are like, or those assists are like completely trivial, you know, like it's just like one guy who is completely in the corner because no one wants to guard him. And right. then you just like, so those are the problems that like metrics are not biased, but are like blind sometimes to some specific things. Okay. And for people that play the game, it's obvious. And the reason it's obvious is because they play the game, they breathe the game. But yeah. for people that like myself that are not that expert, for us, like, cool, it's still a pretty cool way to quantify things and give me a better perspective. But you have to watch a lot of basketball like those guys to actually say like, yeah, this is a little bit like untrue, you know, like you are not capturing this part. And that is what is awesome, because if you actually get to sit with those guys, you maybe will come up with a better metric. So that's one of my ideas.
That is, I think, the most politically correct answer I could ever expect. But that was the right answer. I mean, you know, you can probably come up with a better metric. Now, speaking of metrics, do you think that what people are now referring to as unquantifiable stats, you know, I'm talking about, you know, LeBron's basketball IQ, the heart of a champion, the hustle, that championship DNA that some players have it, some others don't. Do you think, or doing the dirty work, you know, which player does the dirty work better than others? Because there's no stat for times that you hit the floor.
Yeah.
The basketball, right? It's either it's a turnover or a steal, right? But there's nothing that says, you know, you did this right and you rotated defensively this many times and that's why they didn't score. The other team didn't score, right? So do you think we'll get to the point where we can quantify this unquantifiable things?
Don't know. I'm actually not that worried about like quantifying unquantifiable thing. I'm actually like more interested in like, can we actually come up with a way to describe a better like a player?
Yeah.
Like if it's a defensive oriented player, what is his benefits? Does it bring me value? Like, not that it will hit like 15 times the floor and whatever. Like, I think it's more like, what is actually like these characteristics of the player that actually do use it as like a block building for teams, you know? It's like, I need something that has these characteristics. For example, I remember this from the Moneyball movie. They hired a pitcher who had like a shoulder or like, or an elbow injury. And they hired him as the guy in the home just to pick the ball. And the reason they hired him is because they could throw a ball in a specific velocity to the first base, and that will increase the percentage of winning. So probably there's going to be like, you say, like, we need a guy that covers the corner three in this good range. And that will just like, in the total, again, this is a team sport, and the whole idea is kind of like a reinforcement learning problem, is to win.
Yeah.
In basketball, we never care how much you win by.
Right.
Like, it's not a soccer. Like, if you win by 10 goals, it actually makes a benefit for you, because if you tie up with someone by the difference of goal, you might make it to the playoffs. Or in basketball, it's like right. You win, you lose. So I think this is a more hard metric to grasp, because, we know it's not the same by winning by 40 points than winning by 1 point in an right. overtime, in the last completely clutch shot, right? Like, that means it was not an even. It was an even game or a pretty uneven game. So in the whole idea is how to characterize what makes a player the best, so that you can actually make that completely into its potential and say like, you know, I actually need a guy who has these characteristics. So yeah. to actually just like swap it and put it in, and then you're like, okay, now I have a better team. What is someone lacking? Okay. So that was my idea, but no.
And so do you think that will numbers and advanced statistics will ever take away the romantic part of basketball, you know, the heart of a champion and basketball
IQ. Never, because it's played by humans. There's always going to be the human factor in sports, you know, like it's always going to be like the idea of like, maybe wasn't your night. You could be LeBron James in the year and you have the shot that was supposed to be like, for example, you don't have to go that far. Anthony Davis, few games before this whole mess.
Yeah.
The whole, I don't know, the Lakers were playing against who, but they played this pick and roll. They only play pick and roll, but they played this pick and roll move. But instead of he rolling to the basket, he runs to the corner, like not the corner, but the high corner of the tree.
Yeah.
And they make this play like four times in the game. And then LeBron played again for the last position. They give it to Anthony Davis. And he missed it.
Yeah, that was against the Nets.
Everybody in the analytic department will tell you, well, that was the shot. I cannot make Anthony Davis make the shot, you know, like you need to pay multi-million dollars to do this.
Yeah.
But the whole idea is like I crunched numbers, the defense wasn't reading that play. I mean, he throws 3 points and he's decently. So
yeah.
But there's always a human factor. So no, I don't think it will take the beauty. I also think that we don't get used to talking about numbers. And that's a problem. It's not yet in the culture of like talking about like, oh, this guy does this plus minus and whatever, whatever. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like an alien verbs and like words that we're not used to it. So that's why it was like, oh, it's so boring. But I mean, there has always been metrics back in those days, you know, like rebounds and assists probably were so high in the 80s. Now I think the steals and like, for example, turnovers.
Yeah.
Like, so I think it's just like getting used to there are like new metrics that are more relevant for the new area. So, but the problem is like, it also needs a little bit of effort from the NBA fan to say, okay, oh, this is what it means. Oh yeah, that's true. You know, like it actually makes sense. So.
And I mean, yeah, I couldn't agree more. There's definitely, I've now, from our conversations throughout the years, I've gotten a lot more into analytics, and the NBA has a completely free site for advanced analytics. And one can see, you know, basically, I mean, I'm exaggerating, but you could potentially see, you know, when the Lakers were yellow, you know, how much they win. But, you know, I'm just saying, you can see every player, you can break them down into so many categories that makes it so interesting to follow the game from a different perspective, right? And like you said, this is still a sport played by humans. And I think you gave us an amazing example. And I think the other good example I can think of is a Kawhi shot with the Raptors, right? I mean, it bounced four times off the rim. It was an incredibly difficult shot. That was potentially, if we run that through the analytics machine, it would say like, yeah, any day we will take that shot because the percentage of that shot falling in is, I don't know. But yeah, as a defense, we will take it any day.
So there is something, I don't know. I love this field, but I don't think it applies the way humans see the world. So there is something called probabilistic machine learning or probabilistic numbers. And the whole idea is if you were to repeat the same experiment, which is something like what people do, then you quantify percentages and whatever of winning. It's just like you run the simulation with the same kind of numbers. But sometimes you lose, sometimes you win, and that's how you get a total idea. The problem is, real life is not like that.
Yeah.
Like, you will never make, they say, like, okay, Kawhi, to win this, you have to shoot exactly the same shot 15 times so that if you make it 8 out of 15, then we win. It's like, we just take one. It just happens that you make probably, like, if that was a 10% shot, but he make it, like, the one he throw was, like, actually in the range of the 10% that was going to make it. So I think we're not used to thinking about probabilities. Yeah. We're just thinking like pretty deterministic to say it's like, we were supposed to win, but it's like, yeah, I mean, there's a range always that you can move around, you know? And like probably, as my mom used to say, the stars aligned that day and it was your day. Like you made it. Like, I mean, it won't happen again, but.
The other fan base that I can think of that might want to do a little bit more homework on probability are the Knicks. Because last draft, they were so sure they were going to get Zion, but everyone forgot to read the fine print about the probabilities in the draft are now even for the bottom four teams. So everyone has a 17% chance. Fantastic. Great. But you have a greater percentage of not getting the number one draft.
Like
the Knicks were so sure they were going to get Zion. And then they dropped down to what, number three, number four, I can't even remember.
Yeah.
And they were devastated. I'm like, what did you expect? I mean, the numbers were not in your favor. You had the same chance as another three teams.
Yeah. But I mean, but that comes because, again, like, probably the world move fast enough so that you don't get to to familiarize.
Yeah.
So it's like we've always been told that the worst team has the highest percentage in the draft.
Yeah.
And based on that idea and that mental model that we have, it's not completely unlike, it's not bad to think that, sure, we're going to get Zion. It's like, okay, but read the little letters. That's not anymore. Like, that's not the case anymore. Like, this is, they broke it so that everybody has a fair chance. Like, and also people don't tank and whatever, whatever. But
yeah.
I think it's just like, we don't, I don't know, like, up to date with the things that are happening. So that's what we think, old school with the new rules, and that will never work. Never, never.
So Dr. Vargas Hernandez and I read the same paper. He's actually sent me a few papers through the years, and I've always really enjoyed them, except for the part where they actually go very deep into the science, because they use terms that I've never heard in my life and that I probably don't understand. But in the end, we're talking about basketball, something that we have in common and something that I can easily understand. So we read the paper by a bunch of smart people, including Kirk Goldsberry, the author of Sprawlball. And
Rian P. Adams. Sorry, I have to say it because he's one of my favorite machine learning persons in the world. Anyways,
do you want to repeat
the paper? Yeah.
Do you want to repeat his name?
Rian P. Adams.
There we go. And the paper is called Factorized Point Process Intensities, a Spatial Analysis of Professional Basketball. Now, like any other paper, it has a convoluted title. But feel free to tell me that I'm out of my mind. What I understand is that this paper proposes that players can be better categorized using machine learning or using that process, right? Or can you please share a little bit more about the premise of the abstract of the paper?
Okay. I normally don't use the word better because that means there is a way to quantify it.
Okay.
And the way they present this is actually like this idea of like, we don't know. And the only way we know is through like what we believe is the real truth, which is like what humans have in mind, right? Like, and so they don't quantify. The whole idea was a model that doesn't know anything and will try to discretize, like to break down players.
Yeah.
That's the whole beauty of the model, is like the only thing the model is allowed to do is to break players, to make it more not symmetric, more similar and less similar.
Okay.
But then there is no better or worst, because if you go to details, this is an unsupervised, but the whole idea is there's never a ground truth from when you are computing things that are similar and unsimilar. It's just like, does it make sense or doesn't? And yeah. I think that's the beauty of the paper, is they tackle a pretty hard problem with something that we don't know if it's true or not, but the results are pretty interesting. So
in simple terms, and I'm going to try to avoid the term better, they were trying to categorize players in a different way other than, you know, your traditional guard, point guard, shooting guard, forward, center, and power forward, right?
Yeah. So think about it like, okay, I think actually that like computers. So we go to school, we learn and whatever, and based on what we are learning is what we do in life. So if you learn playing basketball, you always learn these five positions. And I think even in the playground makes sense, but in professional basketball, it never makes sense. Even in college basketball, it still makes sense. But when you go to the NBA, NBA right now, there are actually few teams that play those five positions. Mm-hmm. And then you wonder, okay, what if, just forget about computers, what if you sit down like a kid that doesn't know, or like a guy that only knows soccer,
yeah,
doesn't know anything about centers and whatever, and you completely like soundproof the videos and it's only like the players playing.
Yeah.
You sit them and then you make them watch tons of films. And then the question at the end of the test is like, so how many players do you think, like how many positions do this like sport has? So we always have to associate five because there are five players in the court.
Right.
So that's could be an like a pretty biased number. That could be like a biased metric, but it could be more. You can have like different sets of five that actually have like positions that are not like compatible. So the whole idea is they ask this question, is like, I'll give you some NBA data and you have to tell me what are the positions. And of course, it's not what are the positions, it's like what makes this position different from another position. And this is just like kind of going back to the problem of like, this is cat and this is dog, they are not similar because they have different things, but we know they are like completely like different categories. And this is what they're trying to do.
So what I thought was fascinating from the paper is that obviously they, to make it, I think, a little bit more understandable, they use the players' names, right? So they said LeBron James and Steph Curry. This is their shooting map. Obviously, LeBron gets better the closer he gets to the basket. And Steph tends to shoot away from the basket, but he's, you know, all the three-point area is all in red.
That's his zone.
Yeah. And then they were saying, look, you know, maybe this other player, player X, is not LeBron, is not Steph, but it's also not DeMar DeRozan, who only takes twos. Maybe, you know, they only shoot from the wings, and that's what they do best. And maybe that's a position, you know, let's call it the wing scorer, whatever. Right?
So one of the pretty cool things that the algorithm found is, so you give the shooting chart, but the shooting chart means like when it shoots, does it make it or not?
Yeah.
And then the algorithm takes it that and then tries to break it into possible shot zones. And it has to come up with models of like, this is one type of shot, this is another type of shot, and this is another type of shot, and another. And then it another layer to say like, what are the most probable among these categories of a player that best describe a player? And that's what they do, is like, this is what like LeBron James has shoot or whoever, or multiple players. And then they come up with this like, this great kind of like shorts, like, you know, like wings, only elbow jumpers, you know, like only dunks in the basket, whatever. These are not known by the model. They're just inferred by the model. So this is, for those who are geeky enough, this will be the latent space, if you want to call it, but it doesn't matter. So this is completely free. It's just like what the computer is actually learning. And then the last layer will be like, what is the best thing that describes each player? So it will be like, instead of saying like, for example, you always think like about position mostly because of where the players actually move around. But in this case, it's actually where they move around, it's actually where they shoot around. This is a different thing that we normally don't think of. It's like, you could move along in the three-point line, but you are completely inefficient. I should not describe you as a, like a, I don't know, wing player, guard, or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like, think about it. We think about like as like awesome D-Rose.
Yeah.
But D-Rose was completely a paint player.
Yeah.
And it's bizarre that we call him a guard just because he starts dribbling the ball. There's kind of like a screen, and he was completely awesome before injuries and whatever, whatever, because we know, and then he will just like attack the rim, you know, like and dunk it. I mean, efficient wise, it's as efficient as a center.
I mean, yeah, that's a really good point. Like,
there's no difference as a center. The only difference is how you get to the ball. But if you don't talk about any dynamics, if the only thing you actually care is like where you ask actually scoring, then this is a pretty different way to see basketball. So this is one of the actually things, pretty cool things that the paper is like, among these chat shorts, they start ranking the most important ones for players.
Yeah.
And what I found awesome is, I don't know, when is this paper published?
I think it was fairly recent. Yeah.
You should guess though, but like, there was one player that was almost evenly described among these possible shots.
Oh, I don't remember. I really don't remember.
Yes.
Think
about one basketball player that will almost shoot anywhere in a highly efficient manner.
I think DeMar DeRozan, I remember his name on the paper. No?
Kyrie Irving. Man, and it totally makes sense, right? Like, he moves the ball a lot. He's pretty good with handles. He shoots pretty well from everywhere. And he's a pretty good guy finishing with both hands, right?
Right.
So the model was just like, you are everywhere, so you might as well everywhere. Like, that's it. While for the other guys, it's like, okay, you are completely center-oriented. So if you see like the index, the numbers, to say like, okay, this guy only takes paint shots. Like, there is no whatever metric to describe him in the paint or outside, sorry, in the three-point line or whatever. And I think that's pretty awesome. Like,
it is super cool, honestly, because it just, you know, for traditionalists might not sit very well, but for a newer generation that is willing to see the changes, I mean, for someone that played I'm talking about myself, I was always categorized as a point guard because I had to bring the ball up, but I couldn't, I don't have a jumper for the life of me. And you know that. I love attacking the paint. I love, you know, just doing layups. I love getting a foul call on me, what I'm trying to do, my take, or kicking the ball out. Very, like, I used to always, I saw myself as a Jason Kidd, Steve Nash. And those guys are pointers, but, you know, a lot of their points also came from the paint or within the paint area. So when you think about it, it's like they are a point guard in the traditional sense that, yes, they bring the ball up, they have handles, but when you really do a deep dive into the numbers, you know, having them as a, or calling them a center would be outrageous, but, I mean, where are majority of their points coming? From the paint.
Yeah, like, or think about, like, now the big guys who throw in the 3 points.
Yeah.
I mean, what? We call them big just because they physically are big.
Right.
But the game of them is not what we used to think about, like Shaq, Kareem, you know, like Wilson, all those, like Dwight Howard even back in the days. Like,
yeah.
They are not like that. So it's bizarre that we call them bigs or centers associated with the idea of attacking the paint when their game is not predicated to that offense. So I think it's just like we stick in the old school Bears, while the basketball has evolved so much that we forgot to read the little details of the contract again. It's like, we don't play in the 80s and the 90s anymore. So,
yeah. Do you think that the findings of the paper, like if I grabbed this paper and then took it to Frank Vogel with the Lakers or any other team, do you think if they actually read it and had someone as smart as you explaining this as you are explaining it to me, would this help them potentially in knowing how to better defend their opposing players?
Sure. I mean, I actually think everybody does it nowadays because it just, I mean, you might not need machine learning. If you actually just look at the shot chart, you will know. I think sometimes what we think is in this players that I think data analysis, computer power, and like pretty smart people like the guys in the paper are actually talking is like, it's also a bad assumption that this is a static problem. Mm-hmm. That you actually just like, from here I shoot and then from here I shoot, right? It's like, is the shot that sometimes the offense design, but sometimes the shot that the defense gives you.
Yeah.
So those are like biases that we tend to forget. So sure, I could tell you like without data analysis that James Harden is like an awesome 3-point shooter. And you say like, sure. But maybe like if I were to plot this, I would say like if you push him right, he's pretty bad. Like bad in the sense of like 0.5% lower percent or something like that. Like,
right.
Not bad as like outrageous. So probably those are the things that we'll start digging up. But the problem is like, this is kind of like a chess problem. If you tell me what I'm bad and I figure, well, not tell me, but if I figure out that you know what I am bad, I should work on myself to improve it.
Yeah,
so it's kind of like a, how do you call it? Like a chick and the rooster? Like what is this word in English? That you're always chasing the egg, you know, like you have to be able to counterattack fast enough so you can actually keep like playing this game. Because right. Otherwise, I mean, you will completely disappear.
It completely checks out because if, say, with Giannis, someone that comes to mind right now, he got, well, the Raptors took them out of the conference finals because he couldn't shoot right from outside the paint. And what did he do? He obviously tried to improve that shot. And now he's getting better at 3-pointers, which is kind of scary. You have to be a step ahead. You have to be 3 steps ahead, right? Because you know that you're going to counter with these measures, but then within a few games, those measures can be re-countered, so you have to counter back.
Like, just and look at, like, how the world evolves. When the Miami team shut Giannis down, everybody was like, this is the blueprint. We got Giannis. That's it. He's no longer, like, a threat. There is this open again and whatever and whatever. But we forgot that, well, we never give a chance Giannis to fight back.
Yeah.
Like, probably he figured out kind of like a hole in his algorithm, you know, like, okay, I never knew I didn't have to face this. So let me face that I'm a great guy, like great as in greatness. And like, maybe I can counterattack. Like, and maybe like if I'm that great as he claims, and I believe because I'm a big fan of him, I think we never know. And that's the whole idea. It's like, it's kind of also like a chess, like, oh, you show me what I have, what I'm lacking of. Let me show you if you were prepared for this move. And
right.
We'll never know. I was so excited about this this playoffs in the East. Finally, something decent.
Let's hope that we have the playoffs coming very, very soon back in our lives. Let's move on to our last segment, which is telling the future with science, which I don't know if it's possible, but this is, I'm just throwing it out there. I don't expect an answer from you, and I don't think anyone listening will expect, you know, for you to give us the definitive answer, but do you think that using science, will we be able to predict what, or sort of predict where the game of basketball will go in the future? Do you think we'll have a 4-point line? Do you think there will be a counter small ball movement where instead of small ball, we go all bigs, like all Anthony Davis, 5 Anthony Davis in the court that everyone can shoot and dunk? So the opposite of the Warriors. Do you think we can predict that?
No, but I like this, the answer I'm going to give, sorry to be like throwing flowers at myself. But
go for it.
I think we tend to forget that the reason basketball has moved is out of completely unexpected players. It's something called like, kind of like serendipia, we call it in science. It's like out of luck, you find something and you just like, and think about it. What happened when like Shaq came into the league? Yeah, we know we needed bigs, but we never looked for bigs that were so dynamic and powerful and like strong. So what happened is like he created an entire movement, and then you get Bynum, and then you get all those big guys who were like not the traditional bigs that were just like fat enough to just like push someone and dunk it. It was like you have to call, have to run fast, you have to be dynamic and blah, blah. So I don't think that's the case, because it's pretty hard to predict what a player is going to mold the NBA. For me, the lastest and the greatest example is Steph Curry. Mm-hmm. No one will saw that coming, you know, like, and kudos to the Warriors to actually give it a shot, because in any other team will be like, no, we don't want you to shoot threes. Stick to what you are. You're a guard, you dribble, you put, you make screen and you shoot to the wings and whatever. Yeah. And then these guys were like, cool, we had a guy that shoots threes. What can we make it better? So actually what's going to have data analysis is not to discover where the basketball is moving, is to better complement bizarre pieces. Pieces that has never seen like the eye of the algorithms, where it's just like, okay, but now I have this, how actually make it better? Because no one expects someone like this. And probably the next one was Giannis. Probably the next big movement will be like guys who are actually big, because at least, well, I mean, unfortunately in basketball, you need to be big. But you have to be agile.
Yeah.
And one of the things I actually like is that you have to be a complete player finally. It's like you don't have to be a mastermind of, you know, like poker or boards or whatever. You have to be a complete player with some picks in some categories. But the more complete you are, the better basketball player you are, and the more kind of like shine I can actually bring you from you, and I can actually make a team better. So I think that's going to happen. So, no, I don't think, because also we don't know how draft works. We know how to predict good players.
Yeah.
But it's pretty rare that actually like someone out of the draft say like, this is the guy, you know, like every time they draft someone, we always say, we hope this guy becomes, and in hope is always like an uncertain metric. So we don't know. It might happen, it might not happen, but we'd never say, like even with LeBron, who was just like the biggest case, everybody will say, oh, we hope this is the next Michael Jordan, whatever. They never say, this guy's going to be the next Michael Jordan. He's going to revolutionize how guards move. No. We don't know. And that's because we live in a human world.
As of yet, machines haven't taken over, but who knows. Right now, which current team do you think is making the most progress using machine learning in basketball? Who's sort of squeezing the most out of this technology that's available? The Warriors?
Either the Bucks or the Raptors.
Oh, the Bucks. Okay.
Well, the reason for the Bucks is because I think they embrace this like low market team, and they have this massive superstar. And the whole idea is, we know we're not gonna get LeBron James. I would keep saying LeBron James. I don't want to like give a free sponsorship for him. Like,
I'm sure he's listening right now.
Yeah, that's what you say. So the whole idea is, I think the Bucks embrace the idea of like, we have this guy.
Yeah.
But we need to make him an all-around player better by having a better team surrounding him. So I think they use algorithms to actually make him a better player. So we don't know what happened if you swap Giannis and just move it to some other team. He will become this massive superstar.
Right.
And the whole idea is because the team that he that was designed for him to play this way. So we don't know if he will be like a pretty good, like, not to say like second player, yeah, but someone that is not dominant ball oriented. Like someone, yeah, that will say like, I'll stay in the wing. When you give me the ball, I'll attack the rim. It's not like the whole team of the Bucks was surrounded with like, you need the ball because you don't know how to shoot. So if I throw you on the corner, people will just like leave you there. So, okay.
Yeah.
But I also don't, you're big enough, so I don't want another big inside. So, but I need another big to help you guard. And all that idea, I think that came pretty good. The second thing was the Raptors. And I think the Raptors managed to make an without big names. I mean, yeah, they became big names at scouting players who came out of nowhere. Like,
true.
Like no one saw Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet, the guy from Quebec, but he's from playing Oregon.
Chris Bouchard.
Yeah, exactly. Like Powell, like, and I actually think that the next big move of myself, Jiri, was I know who I have to face in the Easter Conference, and I know I need a big guy who just throw a wall of meat to Embiid and Giannis. So I'm going to get Marc Gasol.
Yeah.
Then, and I think those are ideas that are like, those are small problems that are pretty suited for machine learning. Not yet the idea of like D team, construct me D team. It's just like, given what I have, I really need to construct the best team. Because, I mean, you still, it's not that you have a Y check. There's never the case where you have an empty team and you are allowed to draft to whoever you want. That's never right. The case. The case has always been, these are my chances and my options. Which one will make me better? And I think that's a better problem suited for machine learning that, and the idea of like, let's play, I don't know, like PlayStation NBA 2K, and so like I'll get to draft whoever I want.
Right. Last question. Very last question.
Okay.
According to Dr. Vargas Hernandez, what is your personal hottest take, your wildest prediction using science about the NBA or any specific team? Now, I know that you didn't prepare algorithm. Neither did I expect you to. But if you could use a little bit of science and tell us something that is, you know, what is the wildest thing that you could ever tell us?
So, about basketball and science, right? That's the question. It has to not to be with the NBA and nothing like that.
I'll leave it open to you. So
okay. So one of them, and the easiest one, is no one will crack down the March Madness, you know, like board.
The bracket?
Yeah, no one. That's mathematically almost impossible. And on top of this, tons of human, not human error, but like human noise that like you might get injured and then the bracket shuts down. Like
right.
The referee missed the call because he's a human and then the bracket falls down. So that's one.
There
I think the
guy,
second one is in the next.
There was a guy that was that came one team short from having a perfect bracket.
Sure, but I mean,
that's as close as the history of the March Madness bracket has ever seen.
And probably if he were to do the same algorithm again, it will not work. So it was also pretty lucky. So second one is, until we find a pretty good way to quantify chemistry, there is not yet like a numeric way to say, oh, this team has pretty good chemistry. This is still like a human metric, not an.
Yeah.
I think that should be like a target. It might never be feasible. Like we may never read a paper that says machine learning quantifies chemistry in teams. I think that idea will never happen. So that's a hot take that it still will be like a human's factor that we'll just throw in. The third one, like hot. I would love to say that my Bulls will win once again, but I don't think so.
I don't think the numbers are in your favor this time around, man.
Yeah, no, I don't think you even need machine learning to see that.
Yeah, no, it's pretty obvious that they're not doing well.
They are like, No, I think those are my hot takes. Like,
I like the last one. That it's
pretty like wild. Like,
I like that last one. You know that it's. We will probably not see how to quantify chemistry until we find metrics to define it to begin with. But yeah, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time.
I love talking basketball with you and I love the podcast. So
thank you so much. I hope that some massive intellectual mind in the world of sports science can listen to this and then get you a job in the NBA so that you can give me free tickets to the NBA. No, for seriously, I've always enjoyed chatting basketball with you. You always teach me the cool science part about basketball, something that I would have never, ever expected to discuss. And if anyone out there wants to reach out to Dr. Vargas Hernandez, then send us an email. Are you on social media? Do you want people to add you?
I'm on social media. So it's actually funny. So my Twitter account is Rockman, as R-O-C-K-M-N-M-A-N 011. And it was because of Dennis Rodman.
There we go.
Yeah. So that's the reason I got, well, and I used to love rock. So it was Rockman was the closest you could get to Dennis Rodman and rock.
So Twitter at Rockman011.
Yes.
And
I think that's all my social accounts are in that, username. So yeah.
You are by far one of the brightest minds that I've ever met in my life. I'm not just saying that, but you know that I truly mean that. And thank you again for being on the podcast. For everyone out there listening, make sure that you follow us at dropping.dimes on Instagram, dropping at dropping_dimes1 on Twitter, www.facebook.com/dropping.dimes. We have a YouTube channel now, so we'll make that available as soon as possible where this is going to be uploaded. Check out our interview with J.E. Skeets from the No Dunks podcast, which was awesome and just as good as this one. And I think that's it. So on behalf of the Dropping Diamonds crew, Dr. Vargas Hernandez, peace out.
Peace out.